So we continue our study and practice. We say in our sutra service, the Dharma is vast and subtle. This vast Dharma that is our life. Everywhere, everything, every moment, only Dharma. We should have a flashing neon sign out front, could say Dharma 24/7. There's actually no possibility of missing it. There is no life that is outside of it, no experience that is not contained, that is not an expression of this Dharma. So very close, it's hard to see. This afternoon we read some of the Genjo Koan and talked about the fish swimming in the water. And no matter how far the fish swims, it doesn't run out of water. And the bird in the sky, flying forever, never runs out of sky. And Suzuki Roshi says, when we breathe in, the air comes into the inner world. And the inner world is limitless. And when we breathe out, the air goes into the outer world. And the outer world is limitless. We look around and see the shape of things. But no matter how far we walk, we don't run out of this earth. And no matter what kind of place we go to, or what kind of place we find ourselves in, because certainly there are dark places to pretend otherwise or to wish otherwise is silly. This a matter of life and death is no joke. I was going to say it's no fairy tale. Maybe it is a fairy tale, but one of those fairy tales where terrible things happen. And there are dark woods and great dangers. And the possibility of great transformation. This is a splendid opportunity for Buddha Dharma to enter into mud and water. This is a splendid opportunity for Buddha Dharma to enter into mud and water. And of course, we are mud and water, mostly water. Skin bags. Water and some other stuff knit together, temporarily held together, continually wearing away on the outside and the inside. Although I vividly remember a Star Trek episode where someone had discovered the key to immortal life, and he had discovered that the problem is that our cells got bored. So he created this device that you could climb in and it would entertain your cells. So cellular entertainment. And we could then live forever. I'm not sure whether Zen makes the problem better or worse. But as we sit through these hours, we do certainly traverse the many realms, including the boring realm, the tired realm, the dull realm. And usually we think there is some a window of opportunity. And that if we can align everything correctly and strike while the iron is hot, then we can break through. And the teaching of Zen is that every moment is your window of opportunity. This exact body you have now, this exact mind, the world that you live in, this world that is not separate from you. There is no fish without water. Fish and water. Water is life. Fish is life. There is no being without the world. Temporarily we say me and the world, inner world and outer world. But of course, as Suzuki Roshi says, these are not two, not one. But not two. The world is the functioning of our life. And so everything we encounter, with no exceptions, is the life of all worlds. This life of all worlds that is unavoidable. Inescapable, and functions with total freedom, total freedom and creativity appearing now as the monster chasing us through the woods, now as the sound of the cuckoo in spring. Mother Teresa apparently was once asked how she could spend all of her time with the poor and sick and dying people, the lowest of the low. And she said, it's not a problem. I am serving Christ in all his distressing disguises. And she might have said, I am serving the Dharma. I am serving life in all of its distressing disguises. And so as we sit, each one of us appears in all of our distressing disguises. Some of the situations, some of the mind states we encounter are quite familiar. And some of these familiar places are incredibly painful. We enter once again, or we are dragged once again into the bushes. Someone has our head in a headlock and is giving us a noogie on the top of the head. One more time, dragged into the bushes. How did I get here? What's happening? These familiar places are it. So hard to meet, so hard in the familiar sadness, in the familiar wild anxiety, in the familiar panic, so hard to look where you are, because we are so sure that this could not be it. This scattered mind is clearly the problem. This body is clearly the problem. And once I get through this, once my mind settles down, then I'm going to do some real Zen. I'm going to really Zen the crap out of this moment. I'm really ready. I'm getting ready because it's coming up. And so we wait. We think there will be some other better circumstance, especially in these familiar places. But these familiar places are the opportunity, are the generosity of our life, inviting us into the heart, inviting us to see through each thing that arises has some gift to give. But like a fish, a big fish swimming up from the deep of the still pool, as we sit beside the pool, if we move at all, the fish swims back down. So we cultivate this stillness. And of course there is stillness within stillness. We practice letting things be, letting ourself be. We practice finding ourself where we are. And when we find our place where we are, we say this is practice enlightenment. This is not the practice that leads somewhere else. This is not the practice we do in order at some other time to get something else. This is the practice that expresses our life, that is the manifestation of our life. Your whole life sitting here, your whole universe, the whole universe, true self, a little self, big mind, small mind, everything. Nothing hindering anything else. This is the practice enlightenment of the Buddha. This is nothing to do. As Shunrui Suzuki says, there is no preparation for something else. Thank you. So please sit comfortably. And we'll have our Dharma dialogue.
Sitting, this is everything sits with you, the big self, small self. out of the dead world, the universe, whatever sits with you. And this is not comprehensible to, you know, this person's mind. And I've tried for a long time to make that experience happening. You know, it's kind of an inspiring thought to have when I'm doing, you know, right. Bored and back, oh, yes, the universe sits with me. At some deep level, of course, when you speak, it speaks to something.
Right, right.
You know, within me that responds to that. And yes. Mm-hmm. I think I have to be satisfied with that rather than trying to bring it to understanding of my discursive.
Sounds good.
Yeah, but the Dharma talks are a real problem. I mean, because, you say all this stuff and you think, oh yeah, that's what I want. And then the mind, inflates itself or deflates or tries to do something. But to see that and then to have it be enough just to be touched in some way and not understand it. And of course, the universe that's appearing, it is the floor. Is the yearning of the heart. It's certainly, as you say, certainly not what the discursive mind dreams up.
Yeah. And you know, Dharma talks are a problem. Especially for those of us who have to give them an answer. Sorry, because we have to listen to them. But, you know, and the sutras are a problem, and koans are a problem, and hey. Zen mind, beginner's mind is a problem, and, you know, Dogen's a problem. Yeah. And I was talking with one of you about this the other day, these things, the way that Suzuki and Dogen talk, the way the sutras kind of bend around in themselves, certainly the way koans work, they're teaching us a new language that actually uses and then replaces the old way of speaking. And it's what we sometimes call the language of dragons, you know, the language that goes beyond conventional language. And that is one reason we give these problematic talks and read these problematic things and have those of us who work with koans really have problems. So this is there is a way to not bypass the discursive mind, but use what the discursive mind has to offer in the service of this thing that can't actually be spoken.
Right. And I think it's in the harmony of relative and absolute. It says, reading the words, you should grasp the great reality. So hearing the words, hearing the words, not to get stuck on the words, but to realize it's the resonance of the heart that's the true Dharma talk.
Words are Dharma gates, in this case. And even the discursive mind, that very, very troubling thing that we all have that lets us buy groceries and drive cars, that's a Dharma gate too.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you for bringing that in, Ray.
Well, let's sit. Enter this Dharma.